Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. Two 420-foot vertical speedways, three launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Measure that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 Gs in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, welcome to Weird House Cinema. This is Rob Lamb.
And this is Joe McCormick. And today's film for Weird House Cinema is the 1987 Taiwanese action fantasy film Child of Peach, a truly special work of art. Without a doubt, I will say one of the most frenzied and feral movies we have ever watched on this show. This movie is so bizarre, so much, and so fast. And it certainly has a reputation online for being just a tornado of weirdness that I'm genuinely shocked I had never heard of this movie before you selected it for today's episode, Rob. So how did you find Child of Peach?
Well, I think my earliest exposure to it was an Everything is Terrible 2-minute clip mashup of scenes from the movie. And I watched this at some point and was just blown away by the weirdness. But also just assumed, well, these are just the highlights. They took the, you know, you get a weird movie. If you get all the weirdest moments, you probably got about 2 minutes worth. And so I laughed, but then I kind of moved on. But then when we were talking about Thrilling Bloody Sword, another Taiwanese fantasy film in the last year or so on Weird House Cinema, I ran across it again when I was looking into Taiwanese cinema in general and some of the extras on that disc from, I believe, Justin DeClue of the Gold Ninja video. And that put it back on my radar. And I was like, oh, well, if we've enjoyed Thrilling Bloody Sword this much, then I guess we've got to come back around to Child of Peach.
There are certainly some aesthetic ways in which this movie did remind me of Thrilling Bloody Sword, but I'm going to make a very strange comparison. I kept thinking it had another kind of bizarre but familiar energy. And I finally realized what it was, and it's that this movie kind of reminds me of Morozko, a.k.a. Jack Frost, the 1964 Soviet fantasy film that we covered a couple years back around Christmas. And we can get into more of the similarities and differences in a bit, but I was trying to think why that is. And I think one reason would be, despite the fact that you could argue these are both kind of, whether intentionally or not, a kind of psychotronic cinema, they're both actually based on folk tales, so they have a kind of old soul to them, despite how weird they are.
Absolutely, yeah. And that's something we always have to take into mind when we're looking at a quote-unquote weird film from another from another country's film tradition, you know? Like, how much of it is genuine weirdness? And I think there's a lot of genuine weirdness in this movie.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But then there is, you know, there's certain aspects of it that are entrenched within a different film culture than one might be used to. And then there is this aspect of it that comes from folklore. And, of course, folklore is also a rich well of wonder, but also weirdness.
Well, yeah, fairy tales are like
all fairy tales are kind of weird if you're unfamiliar with them. There's just like the set you grew up with, so they don't feel weird anymore. But you experience the fairy tales of an unfamiliar culture and you're like, whoa, that is odd.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah, the ones in your own culture are weird too. You just don't necessarily have the distance to realize that, oh yeah, the idea of Paul Bunyan and a giant blue ox, that's strange. That's strange stuff.
Yeah.
Anyway, the particular folktale here, at the heart of this is a Japanese folktale, the folktale of Momotaro. This is about a hero child born from a giant peach. And it's actually quite famous. It was, I was reading that it was utilized in World War II war propaganda animation in Japan. It's been echoed in various video game adaptations. In fact, I was astounded by this. My son's super into Pokemon. He's super into this Pokemon Scarlet and Violet game. It's the latest Switch game for Pokemon. And there's DLC coming out that is going to have three characters in it that are based on three magical animals in this story that are also in this movie. So it's like it's actually the Momotaro folktale casts a long shadow. It's just one that not everyone is exposed to or doesn't realize they're looking at it.
Wait, Rob, are you telling me that the three guardians of the garden in this film are now Pokemon?
Yes, I've seen the photographs.
My God.
Or they're not photographs. They're not actual like wildlife photographs, but yes, they're on the way.
This will become more hilarious as we proceed to explain the plot.
I also thought it was interesting because, okay, in this basic idea, a baby emerges from a giant peach and then is raised by old people. This story is also reminiscent of the tale of the bamboo cutter, another Japanese tale. This one's about a baby found inside a stalk of glowing bamboo, which has also been adapted many times, including in the 2013 Studio Ghibli film, The Tale of Princess Kaguya from 2013, which I watched not too long ago, and it's quite good, beautifully animated.
Well, that's another thing that makes Child of Peach unique. It is mostly this wild madcap dance of monsters and giant peaches peeing on people and stuff. But it also, there are moments where it really has kind of a sweet core to it, especially with the story of the old couple who lives in the bamboo forest who end up adopting the peach kid as their son. There were moments there where we were genuinely like, this is so sweet.
Yeah, it's a movie that packs a lot in. I mean, it's just bulging at the stitches.
Yeah.
There's so much packed in here. And it feels like a very full meal, but a very satisfying one.
Okay, maybe we should do the elevator pitch. Though this is one of those movies where you have to see it to understand it. Just like explaining what happens and it doesn't really communicate the vibe.
Mm-hmm.
But the pitch goes like this. When the king devil steals the Sword of Sun from the peach garden, it's up to a baby hatched from a giant obnoxious peach to kill the devil and recover the sacred MacGuffin.
That's it. That's the quest.
And there's also some rescuing of a princess somewhere in there. There's a big old rotund knight named Knight Melon. You'll hear a lot more about him. There are guardians that turn into animals. So there's a lot going on. And this is another thing that kind of reminds me of the Soviet fantasy film Morozko, because whereas in that movie you get the feeling that they're just combining so many different kind of fairy tale elements together into a single narrative. This movie, I don't know if they actually come from fairy tales in every case, but this does have that very like lots of different stuff thrown together into a blender feeling.
Yeah, almost kind of a circus feel. Like, well, you got to have this act. You got to have your clowns. You got to have your lion tamers. You got to have this. And so it's all there. Three rings all at once. Look wherever your eyes take you.
Their similarity, I think, has to do in part with the gorgeously weird sets and costumes and the onslaught of peculiar supernatural images and themes, which, again, I think these are partly unfamiliar to us because they are based in the fairy tales of a culture that we're less familiar with in childhood, but also they just contain a lot of strange original elements that I suspect would be weird to anybody watching. Mm-hmm. So there's that in common. But then I think there's another similarity, one that's kind of hard to explain, but really does color our experience of a film. And that is about the pacing of the introduction of unusual imagery and ideas. Do you know what I'm talking about here, Rob?
Yeah, there's kind of a feeling like you're hit with one supernatural element, one speculative element, and then wham, here comes a fairy in to narrate things from the other direction. And
yes.
you can feel a little struck by it.
Exactly. Both of these movies have this habit of kind of throwing a strange new character or image or statement or behavior at you. And it usually does not give you time to be like, wait, what is this? You don't have that sinking in time. It's still just ripping ahead at full speed to the next thing.
Right, right.
Another thing about this movie, and this is partially a warning, love this movie, but it does have these major who is this for issues. So you look at this, you'd be like, oh, this would be good to show my kids. I would not recommend that. So it has a very silly, zany tone and subject matter that would seem to indicate that this is a movie for kids, but I think it is not at all. It is full of inappropriate content. There is almost constant swearing in the hard-baked subtitles. So it has these subtitles, much like Thrilling Bloody Sword, at least in the version we watched, they seemed like they like burned into the film itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and just to skip ahead just a little bit on quality, like this is, there aren't really official, there's no official release of this film. Mm-hmm. Yeah, outside of Taiwan is my understanding. So any copy you find of it seems to be like the same sort of slightly degraded. It's very watchable content, but yeah, it's not restored. It's not pristine by any stretch, and it has the subtitles in, I believe, Mandarin and English, just hard baked in there. And sometimes you can't read them because those are white subtitles against white backgrounds.
Yes, yes. So there were parts where I really don't know what was happening in the plot because it's being explained. There's like exposition dialogue and it's just white text on a white background. So I don't know.
Yeah.
But okay, so there's a lot of swearing in the subtitles. I don't know if that means there is swearing in the original dialogue or if this is a translation issue. Obviously, the as we will note in several ways, the hard-coded subtitles we saw had a lot of, I don't know, what felt like very approximate translations.
Yeah, the subtitles are very rough around the edges anyway, and then they hit way too hard, especially with the swearing at times. And I guess I'm willing to attribute this possibly to just, you know, the crude nature of the subtitles. It's kind of like, what if any of us were given the task of translating Bart Simpson's insults into a foreign tongue that we're not a master of? You know, there's a certain nuance that has to be in place where, you know, Bart is saying crude things, but they're not too crude, or you want to imply this thing, but not state it outright in clinical terms.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, I would tend to give him a break on that and chalk it up to less than perfect subtitles in translation.
Okay. So you got the swearing. There's also some kind of jarring nudity, not of a sexual nature, but just like Peach Kid running around naked a lot. And then I think there's a scene where your Night Melon character gets pranked by just getting his pants pulled down and stuff. There is occasionally really gory violence, but mostly not. Like it's just these suddenly surprisingly gory moments interspersed with mostly more cartoony martial arts action.
Yeah, and generally the violence is directed at some sort of a demon underling.
Yeah.
But still, you know, heads will pop, brains will bleed, that sort of thing.
Also, I don't know whether this one goes in the kids movie column or the anti-kids movie column, but the movie is obsessed with urine. There is so much pee-pee on everything. How many pee-pee scenes were there? There's like Peach, the giant magic peach peeing on people. There's the dog, like animal creatures peeing in people's food. There's other monster. There's a lot of monster pee. I think there are at least four or five pee scenes.
Oh, really? I counted three, but okay. I might have missed one in there. This is ironic, though, because, okay, the day of publication, this happens to be St. Patrick's Day. And originally we were thinking, well, we should do an Irish movie. And that ended up being a whole slog trying to figure out what Irish movie would be appropriate and would be fun. And for a little bit, we were looking at 1986's Rawhead Rex, which famously features a urine scene. And we were like, I don't know, really, I want to talk about that urine scene. So we pivoted to Child of Peach, which has at least three urine gags. But like we were talking about before we came in here, I would say Rawhead Rex is a urine movie, and Child of Peach is a pee-pee movie. And there's a big difference between the two.
And often what is peeing, in fact, in almost every case, the thing that's peeing in Child of Peach is not a human. It's right. Big into animals peeing and peaches peeing and peach-based mechs peeing.
Yes. And very much played for comedy.
Earlier, I did describe the weirdness of this movie as an onslaught, and I think that really is the right term for it. When we were watching it, we had to rewind many times because there'd just be something that was like, what? And then it was so bizarre, but then it was over too fast, and we had to take it back, and we were like, what just happened?
Yeah, this is actually a good movie to watch in like a YouTube-type format because you need to be able to go back and re-examine things you think you saw and think you might halfway understand.
Yeah,
it is indeed just a nonstop sort of picture. I mentioned that Everything is Terrible 2-minute cut of Child of Peach, and I'll embed that in the blog post for this episode at samutamusic.com in case anyone wants to check it out. Like I say, with any other film, I would think, well, you got the weirdest moments, and that's 2 minutes worth of footage. Fair enough. Pretty fun. But no, there's so much more weirdness in the film. Like if you just watch those 2 minutes with Everything is Terrible and you think you've seen it all, you haven't. You can then go and watch the full film, and it's still got so many things to exclaim about.
Yes, the treats just abound.
Now, as we discussed in our episode on Thrilling Bloody Sword, it's our understanding that Taiwanese cinema at the time was kind of the underdog versus Hong Kong cinema. And so there's this feeling in Taiwanese movies of this period, particularly fantasy action films like this, the filmmakers really felt they had to go big. They had to be weirder than Hong Kong. They had to be riskier. And the stunts had to maybe be a bit more dangerous. And I think you can totally see all of this in Child of Peach, a film that you can well imagine critics of the time and of the intended region thinking it might even be trying too hard. You know what I'm saying? Like, oh, well, they just really are trying too hard in this film. I don't think that's what most contemporary viewers make of the film, though it has certainly become a cult classic.
I don't know what that means, trying too hard.
Like, think of some outrageous comedy that not only has to have just a gag a minute, but also really wants you to make sure you got that gag. Hey, did you get that gag we just did? Mm-hmm. Let me remind you of, you know, it, like that energy of just like, I'm going to assault your senses and I just really want you to like me kind of energy, which can be very obnoxious if you're encountering a film in its time. It hasn't had time to sort of, cure in the cellar or anything, as this film has. Like maybe I'm thinking of something like an Ace Ventura, you know, and I don't know to what extent Ace Ventura has matured in the cellar either.
The Mask. Yeah. It's 90s Jim Carrey movies.
Yeah. Yeah. Not exactly the same energy, but you know, I don't know. Just trying to think of movies that are a lot and maybe that changes over time and with different audiences.
Okay. I get you now.
But at any rate, this film, like we said, it seems to have been a hit because it spawned at least one sequel, Magic of Spell from 88 and perhaps Magic Warriors from 89, both starring the same actor and both from one of the same directors. Now, there's no actual trailer that I could find for this film, so we're just going to listen to just a little bit of the audio from the film, just give you a little taste. So this isn't going to be our normal trailer audio treatment, but let's have a listen. Hopefully what you got from that is fun. Now, if you want to watch the film before continuing on with the episode, just have to remind you that this one's hard to come by if you're looking for anything like an official release. I think you're generally going to be looking at imported DVDs or burnt discs. I know Videodrome in Atlanta, they say they have an acceptable copy of it. And you can find it streaming in various formats online. It's exactly the sort of film that I keep expecting Golden Ninja Video to put out at some point, but it hasn't come to fruition. So look around. There's some good places to find it. And also there's that Everything is Terrible 2-minute cut if you just want a sample platter of what the full film would consist of. Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples.
Rob, as the local host with allergies here, they sent you some of their nasal spray to treat your allergies. What was your experience like?
Yeah, that's right. I always wrestle with the pollen a bit when it rolls in during the spring. So they sent me the little nasal spray. I tried out the product and yeah, it sure did help me get on top of my symptoms for the day. And it's so fast acting, it was already kicking in before I left the house.
Astapro is a first-of-its-kind nasal allergy spray. It's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours. Astapro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astapro delivers full prescription-strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing.
Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astapro. Go to astaproallergy.com for a discount so you can get Astapro and go today. Astepro allergy.com. Astapro and go. Use as directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. If you haven't heard of Visible, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Having a one-line plan means you only need you to save. No estranged roommates, exes, cousins twice removed, or AI-powered humanoid robots needed. And because $25 a month really means $25 a month, you can call, text, stream, whatever, as much as you want without worrying about getting dinged at the end of the month.
No hidden fees, no surprises. No, really. It's like the old saying goes, you can't judge a book by its cover, but you can judge a company by its name. So spread the word. Tell all your friends there's a wireless company out there with transparency in their name, and they're called Visible. Start saving on wireless today at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. All right, you want to talk about some of the people involved?
Yeah, and I'm not going to go as in-depth on the cast, but there are some interesting folks to discuss. Now, just a note before I go, too, I had to use multiple databases to get some of this info. So IMDb, TMDb, and also the Hong Kong Movie Database. So some things, especially with a movie like this, some things are listed on one database and they're not on another, or names can be slightly different. Just keep that in mind as we proceed. All right. Starting at the top here, one of the two directors and also one of the stunt coordinators is Chung Sing Chow. Dates unavailable on this particular director. Taiwanese director, and his stunt coordinating and directing credits include both Peach films. This one and then the definite sequel, as well as 1991's 12 Animals, which I've heard good things about, 1985's Drunken Dragon, and 1985's Hello, Dracula, which is a hopping vampire film and film franchise that is going to, we're going to mention it multiple times in our discussion of the people in this movie.
I was looking this up. I think there is also a Korean TV series of the same name that is, as far as I can tell, unrelated.
Huh. Yeah, I have a lot of questions about Hello Dracula. Like, is it a definite franchise, or is this like the Italian zombie franchise, where it's all about how these movies have been released outside of the original market?
Well, I was looking for a stream of Hello Dracula to try to see if I could, I don't know, just get a little flavor of it. Because I loved the name when you told me this. I first heard it in the Big Bopper voice, you know. So, this looks like a franchise I would love to check out if I can actually get a copy of this movie.
The other director is Chun Ling Chin, who lived 1942 through 2016. Additional planning and directing credits include Dragon Ball, The Magic Begins from 1991. And yes, this is connected to Dragon Ball Z.
As somebody who was never a Dragon Ball Z fan, I've only seen little bits of it and heard other people talk about it. I did have friends who were into Dragon Ball Z. It seemed like a show that was very oriented around the concept of powering up. Is that accurate?
Yes, I think I think it has almost as large, if not as large, a footprint in many people's sort of pop culture upbringing as Pokemon. Mm-hmm. But I personally don't know a lot about it. My son has not gotten into Dragon Ball Z, but I know this is the kind of thing, like, if you have Dragon Ball Z in your childhood, then it is a part of who you are for the rest of your life.
Seems like it provides a useful set of metaphors for whenever you're getting ready to do something important. You know, like you're going into Dragon Ball mode, maybe you're powering up for this test at school.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is a live action 1991 adaptation of the Dragon Ball manga and TV series that led to Dragon Ball Z. So, for instance, this movie from 91 has Goku in it, if that means anything to you out there. But anyway, Chin also worked on Hello Dracula. All right. And then the writer for this film is Ching Kang Yao. Born 1946, extensive screenplay credits, between 49 and 53 films, depending on the database you're looking at. His earliest credit is the Bruce. It's Bruce Lee, L-I. I've also seen this pronounced Bruce Lai, which is kind of fun because it's not really Bruce Lee. It's just a guy who looks almost exactly like him, I guess, or close enough to market him as such. But anyway, he is the 1975 film Super Dragon versus Superman.
That's but a good also, title.
Yeah, yeah, good title. It, you know, implies some certain things that I'm not sure the movie's going to deliver on. he also wrote Hello Dracula, Dragon Ball The Magic Begins, One-Armed Swordsman versus Nine Killers from 76, The Seven Commandments of Kung Fu from 79, and 1981's Chivalry Deadly Feud.
Okay, a few good-sounding titles in there.
All right. Our star, though, is wrapped up in this character of the Peach Kid, Peach Boy, whatever you want to call him. Basically, like we said in the movie, a male baby is born from a peach and is rapidly grown up into a youth. That youth is played by the female actor, Cao Lao Lin, or Lam Su Lau, or also Sharon Foster. So the name is listed different ways. I think these are maybe different aliases. Certainly Sharon Foster is an Americanized alias that was probably, you know, used as some of these movies were marketed in other parts of the world. But this movie was apparently big enough a deal for her that it kind of earned her the nickname Peach Baby. So I think we can call her Peach Baby if we want, or we can just call her the kid, however you want to cut it.
But she doesn't play the baby. She plays like the grown up Peach Boy who is ready to fight evil.
Yes. Playing a male character, but definitely has this kind of punky Brewster kung fu spirit to her. Very, very peppy. I've seen her described as a kung fu wunderkind of her time. She apparently attended a Peking opera school in Taiwan, but quickly made a name for herself as an adorable fantasy action movie performer. On various databases, her acting credits go back to 1980, but her career seems to really take off with 1986's Kung Fu Wonder Child, a wuxia film in which our youthful hero battles evil forces.
Okay, could also describe the movie we're talking about today, or probably many others.
Yep. And then comes Child of Peach in 87, which apparently earned her the nickname Peach Baby. The Peach sequel follows, as do some other general youth versus demon films, including 12 Animals. Sometimes with the actor playing a female youth, other times a male youth. And she seems to cross over into Hong Kong productions for a while as well, which isn't surprising given the apparent exchange that went on between the Hong Kong and Taiwanese film scene during this time, as Justin Declue discusses in some of the extras on Thrilling Bloody Sword. But I think I've even seen one of the Hong Kong films she's in. I don't think it's a very big role at all, but 1989's The Iceman Cometh, a movie about frozen then thawed swordsmen from the Ming Dynasty who then have to battle it out in modern-day Hong Kong.
Whoa, that's a good premise.
Yeah, I don't remember much about it, but I remember I ended up watching it because it came highly recommended from some particular like Hong Kong film enthusiasts who were like, if you want to see a sword fight, watch this movie. So set your Highlander aside because the Iceman cometh. Anyway, Peach Baby's tremendous. So much energy.
Oh, yeah.
Just wonderful charisma. She's wonderful.
Totally agree. Peach Kid rules.
All right. Now, we have an old man and an old woman who are going to be important to the plot. They end up raising Peach Baby. And the old man is played by Tu Chin, who lived 1932 through 2001, Beijing-born actor known for such films as Dragon Ball, The Magic Begins. He plays Gohan, if that means anything to you Dragon Ball fans. He was also in Hello, Dracula 1, 2, 3, and 5. Note, they seem to go up to 6. So he's a very fun actor in this. He has a lot of, old man act kung fu comedy. He has 170 acting credits on the Hong Kong movie database. He's also in Magic of Spells.
This is one half of our Bamboo Forest power couple who end up adopting Peach Kid from the Peach.
Oh, yeah. They're a lot of fun. There are a lot of nuances to them in their relationship.
Yes.
Old woman, and again, I think these are their names, at least in the subtitles, because they refer to each other as such. They're like, old man, do this. And then he's like, old woman, do this, and so forth. But anyway, the old woman is played by Yao Mei Fong, born 1958. She's apparently only in 8 films, including Magic of Spell and Hello, Dracula 3. But I thought she was delightful in this. Very funny. Obviously a much younger actor playing an older woman, but it's a very spirited performance.
She does great. There's a whole like chase scene between her and the peach where it involves the peach peeing on her. It involves her butt catching on fire because she's going too fast at one point. But it's great. And she and the old man have some really great exchanges that I don't know exactly what is getting lost in the translation, but like the moments where she says, like, I could born a melon, and the old man says, you can't even born a potato.
One of the main themes with her character is that, yeah, she desperately wants to raise a child. And at one point, and of course they're aged, as they remind each other. But they're like, should we just raise Melon Knight? What if we raise Melon Knight? What if Melon Knight was our son sent from the Buddha? And they seem to entertain this idea until something better comes along.
Melon Knight, who is a very large, full-grown man.
Yes, yes.
But they do note that he looks cute like a baby.
Yes, yes. He does have those big cheeks. All right. One of the villains we encounter in this is, I've seen her credited as Zombie Mother, but I think we can think of her as the witch. She's very much a witch character. There's some big Baba Yaga energy to this role. And I didn't realize it was a drag performance for my entire viewing of the film. It wasn't until I started looking through the credits that I realized this was the case. Played by actor Lin Kuang Yung, dates unknown to me, but a stunt performer and actor who, is a lot of fun as our over-the-top, hell-escapey matriarch of evil.
Yeah, there are multiple really good cross-gender performances in this, and the witch is fantastic. She wears a Ziggy Stardust wig, basically. Am I right about that?
I believe so. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So she has a lot of pizzazz. She's a fun witch, and basically she just wants to find a good match for her two sons, a nice princess for one of them or both of them to marry.
That's right. She kidnaps a princess from a castle and like brings the princess back to hell. And she's like, well, you will marry my two sons now. And the princess is not interested. And then she yells at the princess. She calls the princess some cuss words, but she also says, you're engaging in fault finding with my sons.
So yeah, fun performance. This particular actor, I think it looks like maybe did a lot of like smaller roles, but maybe some bigger ones as well. So a lot of like swordsman, a lot of thug credits. So, you know, in action films, one of the underlings who gets into fights with the hero, that sort of thing. Oh, but then let's talk about Night Melon, also sometimes credited as Watermelon Boy. This is played by the actor San Ping.
You know, sometimes a movie like this will just cast a big guy because they like he looks funny in the scenes or so they think, but it's not actually as funny as they think it is. In this case, it is. Like, this guy has a lot of his character is written in a hilarious way, but also he has a lot of just kind of look into the camera moments where, I don't know, it works. He just looks funny.
Yeah. I mean, he has kind of a ridiculous haircut.
Yes.
He's constantly in kind of silly looking clothes. So it's really played up. But we're talking about a guy who's obviously a heavy set comedic Taiwanese actor. And you look at the various roles he's played and you see, like, for instance, in Hello, Dracula, he just plays fat cop, which there's no way that that's not just a comedic bit part. You know, I'm imagining just a cop that is frightened by a vampire and runs away. Uh-huh. I would bet money on that being the case.
But in this movie, while he is certainly the butt of jokes and pranks by the demons and so forth, he's also a genuine hero. So he's like he is in this film both a figure of fun and a figure of strength and courage.
Yeah, and I think something that really is telling about this is that this actor also played the character Pigsy from Journey into the West in at least three films. Pigsy, for anyone who's not aware, this is one of the major characters in Journey into the West alongside the Monkey King. I think that's kind of the energy of that character. It's like a rotund, porcine character who is humorous, but also is a hero, is also, very much fighting on the side of good. So that might be part of it. We've maybe seeing some Pigsy energy in this role because, he certainly gets to act cowardly at times. There's some pratfalls and lots of humor, but he also gets to just really kick butt, too. He busts out a suplex at one point. There's a part where he does like a really killer senton drop. This is where like there's a demon on the ground and he jumps and brings all his weight down on the demon, like back first onto him. He gets to whoop some butt as well.
He also gets powered up for extra heroics at the end of this movie. And I thought the mechanism they chose here was interesting. The way they power him up is they have the little fairy do a Cupid's arrow into him and the princess. So they, against all odds, fall in love with each other. And this brings him extra strength to fight the devils to rescue her.
Yes. Love is his energy source.
And then once she's out of her jail cell, they're just like kissing through the entire final battle.
Yep. So lots of fun with that character. It grew on me. Like at first I thought it's like this is just going to be a one note, one dimensional comedic character. But there are at least two dimensions in play here.
Oh, totally. I love Night Melon. I think he's great.
Okay, now this is a much smaller character, but at one point, one of the demon underlings that they battle is referred to, at least in the subtitles, as Hercules. He's very much this kind of muscly ogre character played by Huang Jinhui. And if you're wondering, hey, is this the same big muscled ogre dude that was in Thrilling Bloody Sword that got stabbed up the butt with the Thrilling Bloody Sword? Well, let me assure you that it absolutely is.
No way.
Yep, it's him. He has a 16 bulging acting credits on the Hong Kong Movie Database, playing mostly like giants, muscle men, and bodyguards, you know, the type. Mm-hmm. His earliest credit is 1973's Kung Fu Inferno, and this is actually his penultimate role before 1989's King of the Children, a.k.a. Hello, Dracula 4.
What? Does he play a vampire?
I'm assuming he plays a muscle dude. I don't know what kind of muscle dude.
Maybe a muscle vampire? In this, so he's a muscle demon here, but in Thrilling Bloody Sword, he was a statue that came to life. It was in that scene where like each statue had only a specific place on their body where they could be wounded. And then I think he was the last one left, and it's like, oh wow, we cannot find his weakness until finally in Thrilling Bloody Sword also had a little fairy character. Strange thing in common, but the little fairy in that movie like used her X-ray vision on him to determine that he had to be stabbed in, I think euphemistically called it the thigh. And then, but when they show it, he stabs him in the butt.
So, yeah, they had a different person on subtitle translation duties for that film.
Yeah.
I feel like the subtitles for Child of Peach would have been a little cruder. But speaking of that fairy, not the same actor playing the fairy. In this film, Shadow Lu plays the fairy, born 1978, a child actor who is in, I think, mostly Hello Dracula movies. She played Tintin in Hello Dracula's 1, 2, 3, and 5. And I think she is actually a Dracula, a vampire, a hopping vampire. Oh, Jiangxi in that movie.
You mean the actresses in real life?
Maybe. And then finally, there are other wonderful cast members in this, but the last one I'm going to mention is Huang Chongyu playing the Demon King or the Spirit King. There are various ways he is described. The main villain, born 1961, Taiwanese actor who seems to have played a fair number of wise masters, vampires, and so forth. He was also a martial arts choreographer and director.
King Devil also rules. The villains in this, just across the board, have awesome hellish charisma. King Devil is great. The witch is great. All the little demon fighters. We should get into more about the individual demon fighters as we talk about the plot. But everything from hell is good in here.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. If you haven't heard of Visible, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Having a one-line plan means you only need you to save. No estranged roommates, exes, cousins twice removed, or AI-powered humanoid robots needed. And because $25 a month really means $25 a month, you can call, text, stream, whatever, as much as you want without worrying about getting dinged at the end of the month.
No hidden fees, no surprises. No, really. It's like the old saying goes, you can't judge a book by its cover, but you can judge a company by its name. So spread the word. Tell all your friends there's a wireless company out there with transparency in their name, and they're called Visible. Start saving on wireless today at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay. Picture this, it's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road, the steeper the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.
All right, well, let's break down the plot here.
All right, well, it gets right into it. We just start somewhere in the mountains, and it is clear. It's an indoor set meant to represent the mountains. It's kind of like, you know, it looks like the Guts Aggro Crag, but with like trees and happy vegetation everywhere.
Yeah. We're told that this is somewhere in the Himalaya Mountains. It's the peach garden. It's lush and warm due to the power of the Sword of the Sun, which is embedded in the hilltop, Excalibur style.
Now, pretty much right off the bat, you start figuring out that you're not going to be able to read some of the hard-burned subtitles because it tells you, you know, we're here in the peach garden, and then you see, but right there in the peak, there is a different world, the peach garden. As the natural power absorbed by the Sword of Sun, it, and then it's just a white text on white background. So something about the garden, I'm not sure. But then a song kicks off, and I rewound and listened to the opening song probably 14 times. It's just, it's a great tune. Really puts you in the mood for happy fighting. And we get to see all of the guardians of the Peach Garden going about their business and doing transformations. So who are the guardians here?
Well, the subtitles tell us that they are, well, the song tells us they are the naughty angels, right? They're the guardians of the of the peach garden.
It says turning into rainbows something. Can't read that. Dad and mom start playing magic. Naughty angels dance on the roof.
Yeah, that seems accurate. So these three elfish guardians. The subtitles tell us that they are Tiny Cock, Tiny Dog, and Tiny Monkey. I believe in general, these characters are associated with the pheasant, with a domestic dog, and with a monkey of some sort. And we encounter them in their animal forms, and then we see them in this scene transform into their human forms. And don't worry, they have a third form that we won't find out about until the final battle. But they are the guardian angels of the garden. And the garden is ruled over by what is described as an intimate couple. I take that to mean a cult power couple who are raising a plump, cute baby boy on the magic nectar of a giant peach, a.k.a. the holy peach. So Mother Peach tends to the baby while Father Peach makes swords fly around their cavern home.
Yeah, he does sword telekinesis in the cave while the mother, like, harvests the nectar that drips off of... I don't know if there's a word for this. What is the little nub on the bottom of a peach called?
Ooh, that's a good question. I don't know, but it's prominently featured in many of the peach designs we see in this film.
Yeah, okay. So the little peach nub drips nectar into a big glass punch bowl. It's a punch bowl. Mm-hmm. And then I guess she gets it from the punch bowl, and then does she feed it to their baby?
I believe so. This is like the sacred elixir that is making Peach Baby strong.
But these two are the masters of the garden. And then so they're living in peace and harmony. It seems like a almost kind of like a perfect existence, it's implied to be. But then, they one day something feels amiss, and they say, a stranger is coming. What is this? And then like four big balls just roll into the garden.
Yep. And they explode, and out of them come devils. This is the Devil King, or King Devil, and his cronies. They have come to claim the magic sword, better protect the baby. And just another myth note or folklore note here, I think this character is generally referred to as an oni in the Japanese tradition, and certainly has oni notes in the character design here.
So how to describe the King Devil? He's wearing armor. Is this kind of a samurai armor?
Yeah, it looks very, very Japanese in its inspiration, which makes sense given the origin of the folk tale, and has big oni teeth.
Huge fangs almost like fangs that look funny to try to fit inside his mouth.
Yep. Like it's a mouthful. Like luckily this guy's not actually having to do much live vocal acting, I think. He's just kind of goes, rawr, and somebody dubs over it.
But he's got a huge red wig, so red hair, gigantic, bushy red eyebrows. He's got pale makeup on his face, the sort of samurai-ish armor. His helmet has a big, what do you call that? Kind of the upward-facing crescent moon shape on it, like horns.
Yeah, he cuts a great profile.
Oh, yeah. King Devil is so stylish. And so he gets there and he says, I want the sword. And of course, you know, the master is the gardener, not just going to give him the sword. So he manifests, he has his balls explode, and they transform into these devils with green hair and horns who are wielding these long, like, pole arm weapons. And then there's a big battle that breaks out, and the battle is amazing. I watched the first 10 minutes of this film multiple times.
Yeah, this is a film where I think a lot of people, you might not expect the martial arts action to be this good, but the martial arts action is, and this is great. I think maybe the martial arts is stronger in this film than Thrilling Bloody Sword, though it was still really impressive in Thrilling Bloody Sword. Like, no matter what your issues are with, like, not being, you know, being able to understand all the subtitles or know what's going on plot-wise or at any given point, the action sequences absolutely make sense. Like, they have build to them, they have callbacks, they tell a story with the action, and I think it's kind of a testament to just the tradition of Taiwanese and Hong Kong cinema at the time that this was just sort of, this was so important to making a film. Mm-hmm. So it's great. Highly recommend the action. We'll keep talking about it.
But while the battle is going on, so you get the master, the man from the cave, and the three guardians fighting off the devils, the king devil goes up to the Sword of Sun and pulls it out of the stone, I guess. And then it's like shooting this green electricity all over the place. Mm-hmm. So as soon as he takes it, the garden turns dark and snow starts falling. So again, I think it was established earlier that the sword is what makes the top of the mountain habitable and a lush garden instead of just a, you know, snow-capped rock.
Yeah. And then things go downhill from there.
Yeah. So the king devil, unfortunately, he kills the man and the woman, murders them, and casts the guardians off of the mountaintop.
But not before Mom makes a plan for Peach Baby. She takes Peach Baby, puts the baby inside of the Holy Peach, and the Holy Peach flies off.
That's right. So it is, it's Moses in the basket, except it's a baby in a peach.
Yeah. And, you know, since the peach is alive and has personality, it's not just like random, like, where will this baby wash up? It's like, no, the peach must find suitable parents for the baby.
That's right. It is a sentient peach. Also, mm-hmm. while the peach is flying away, this is where we first meet the fairy, I think. A fairy just randomly shows up and just says, "It's strange. The peach garden is gone."
She's mostly here, I think, to move the plot along in multiple ways.
Oh, and also, as the peach is leaving, she goes and talks to the dying woman in the cave, who she calls the woman landlord. Which I thought was interesting. It was like, is the fairy paying rent? But okay, we cut from here to meet the old man and the old woman. They are living together in the bamboo forest, and they are going to a shrine of the Buddha to pay homage. We see that they are they kind of crack wise, but they are also in many ways a pious and kind-hearted couple. And they go to the shrine of the Buddha and have a conversation about how they are unable to have children. But when the woman goes off to wash clothes at the side of the river, she comes across a giant peach. And from here unfolds an amazing chase scene. Rob, I don't know if there's anything you want to mention about this, but it goes over over river water, air and land. It has like a sort of dragging scene where the lady's butt catches on fire.
Yes,
it does involve the peach peeing on her, but she also does sort of catch it in the end.
Right. It is a frantic chase. This chase sequence is well represented in that 2 minute Everything is Terrible cut. And it's just includes a lot of antics with, and indeed, the peach peeing on her to put out the fire and so forth. But eventually she catches it and kind of locks it in a room back at the house. And so when the old man shows up, she's like, "Old man, you got to get in here and deal with this peach." And he's like, "Oh, old woman, you were just making things up. I can handle this." And then goes in and encounters the peach.
Yeah, he says he's going to eat it up. I'm going to go in and eat the peach up. There's also a very funny moment where in the foreground, the old man and the old woman are talking, and he's saying, "You know, that's okay. I'm hungry. Prepare a meal for me." And she's like, "No, there's a haunted peach." And then in the background, we just see the peach zooming around like behind their backs. It's like a ghost in a horror movie.
Yeah, just zooming around ominously in the back. They have no idea what's about to happen.
And it's doing poltergeist stuff. It makes the furniture dance and spin around in the air almost mm-hmm. exactly like Trumpy from Pod People. It has similar powers.
Yeah.
But I think the fight stops when the fairy shows up to convince the Peach to stop doing satanic black magic. Is she?
Yeah, there's kind of a fight that happens where, like, the old man jumps up on the rafters and the Peach chases him. And he's like, "You stink, Peach."
Yeah.
It's so good. But yeah, then the fairy shows up and she's like, "Hey, Peach, cut it out. These are some good folks. I think you need to open up and let them raise the baby."
That's right. He says, "This couple are good persons." And then the Peach cracks open, it hatches, this kind of beautiful holy light comes out of it. Mm-hmm. And then there's the baby. And so the old woman grabs the baby and she says, "Old man, take a look at it, real cute." And from here, they adopt the baby. They make it their own. And it is actually shockingly sweet. Like, there is this sort of montage of her rocking the baby and singing to it as it falls asleep. And then we see the baby growing older and in this montage. And Rachel and I were watching this and she was like, why am I having feelings?
I know. I felt the same way. Like, the baby is very adorable. And there's the part where, yeah, she's singing, "Touching your head and touching your hands," like a little lullaby. Mm-hmm. And it's very sweet. It's legitimately sweet.
Oh, and we should mention earlier when they were at the Buddha shrine in the forest before they get Peach Kid, this is when they meet Night Melon. So mm-hmm. they're like, they're saying, "We wish we could have a son." And then I don't know where Night Melon comes from. It's like he falls out of the sky.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. He's on some sort of adventure, right?
Yeah. And he drops down. And at first you're like, "Who is this?" But they're like, "Oh, here's a big baby. Let's raise him." And then they realize, like, oh, no, he is cute like a baby, but this is a grown man. And then we discover this is Night Melon. He's out hunting birds, I think, with his retainers. And he shows off his strength by chopping down a giant stalk of bamboo, like a tree sized one, with his hands to get the bird out of it.
Yeah. There's a wonderful jarring transition, though, because we have this wonderful lullaby, rocking my sweet Peach Kid into slumber, that sort of thing. But then immediately we cut and it's like, "Meanwhile, in hell.
So the king devil returns to hell, where there is a frozen old witch and all her evil demon children. And this scene is actually, I think, quite atmospheric and spooky.
Yeah, so this is supposed to be one of the cold hells. Now, there are numerous cold narakas in Buddhism. I've seen it listed that there are a total of like maybe 8 cold hells, and they're defined by the cold sounds that the inhabitants make and or what sort of damage it does to the body. So are your teeth chattering at in the cold, or are you going in pain? Is your body merely covered with cold blisters? Are those blisters bursting and then the pus freezing over your body? Or are you so cold that like parts of your flesh have fallen away and we can see your internal organs?
I don't know. It's one of those. It seems real bad here because the demons are crying out for relief. You see the demon children walking up to a mound, and then this old witch comes up out of the mound, like she pushes away the earth at the top of it. And the demons are saying, or I don't know if they're demons, that maybe they're damned people. The people there, they're saying, get up, mom. And they say, "Mom, we don't want to stay here." But the witch says, "It's destined because we've done evil things before." I think that means like in life, maybe they did evil things. So they're stuck here in jail. She says, "We're all cursed. We're locked up in jail." And they say, "Grandma, get us out of here." And then she says, "It's impossible. Let's spend our life like this." Again, I think maybe something is getting lost in the subtitles here. But then the King Devil shows up and he's got the Sword of Sun with him. And with the power of the Sword of Sun, he turns hell into a kind of peach garden. He's like, "Okay, now hell isn't cold anymore. Y'all can chill out."
Yeah, so he's recruiting himself some minions here with the power of the Sword of the Sun. Mm-hmm. And instantly, all of these newly won demonic minions take on a new air, a new likeness. So the old mom, the old witch here, suddenly has the Ziggy Stardust wig. We see Hercules, the big muscly ogre dude. There's some other specialized demon troops as well. I think one of my favorites is the wind guy. He's like this demon underling that has a big sack of wind that he uses in battles, either to to blow his adversaries away or to create a really stiff wind that they can't walk into, kind of comedically. Mm-hmm.
And the payoff on the windbag demon is fantastic.
Oh, yes.
But so the king devil has defrosted the demons of hell, and the witch says, "Thank you, my king devil. You give us new life." And interesting take on the harrowing of hell here.
Yeah.
So the witch is obviously interested. She's like, "King devil, what's the sword in your hand?" And the king devil explains that he's taken it from the peach garden. And I think he explains what he plans to do with the sword, but most of the subtitles here are against a white background. So I do not know what he says his plan is, but it seems to me that his plan is to do evil, maybe, and to rule over the people of the world and make them miserable.
Yeah, I mean, not to get too deep on this, but in freeing these people from one of the hells, like in the from the Buddhist perspective, like he's interfering with like the natural order of the universe, like, because again, in Eastern traditions, the hells and hell realms are more about transforming into something better. Like, this is, no matter what the subtitles might say, I think we might infer that these are people who are being processed through this realm and eventually in another incarnation will be better for it. So he's interrupting that. He's breaking them out so they can continue to be bad in a way that's out of alignment with the universe.
I think in one of the subtitles they do say, well, we've got 1,000 more years here.
Yeah.
But yes, he breaks it off short. They clearly are not redeemed. They have not improved their souls at all. So they still just want to do evil, and they're going to help King Devil in that regard by brutally attacking a village. This is the next thing we see them do. Like, the witch shows up and she says, I get a thrill as I smell these people. I want to taste their blood. And she gets all excited, and they just attack all these people in a village. That one part, they're like setting fire to houses and beating people down and just slaughtering them. And there's one part where I think a demon attacks some kids that are swimming in a lake, and their dad is on the lake shore, and I think he calls them like Bobby and Denny or something in these subtitles. Mm-hmm. And then he jumps into the water to save them, and then they send like a mutant shark after him.
Oh yeah, they're shark demons. That's right.
Yeah. Those will come up again later.
Yeah. So they burn this city to the ground, or this town to the ground, this village. And this is something this film has in common with Thrilling Bloody Sword. Both films have, at least to my eye, terrifying fire effects. Just more sensitive to this kind of thing now, but I'm like, oh, geez, it's like that's not just a magic staff shooting a little bit of flame. I think they're using a flamethrower that looks like jellied gasoline.
Yeah. And we do see what seem to be unsimulated footage of like houses burning down. So they burned some real huts and stuff for this.
Mm-hmm.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. If you haven't heard of Visible, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Having a one-line plan means you only need you to save. No estranged roommates, exes, cousins twice removed, or AI-powered humanoid robots needed. And because $25 a month really means $25 a month, you can call, text, stream, whatever, as much as you want without worrying about getting dinged at the end of the month.
No hidden fees, no surprises. No, really. It's like the old saying goes, you can't judge a book by its cover, but you can judge a company by its name. So spread the word. Tell all your friends there's a wireless company out there with transparency in their name, and they're called Visible. Start saving on wireless today at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
So the devil is up to some bad business and really needs to stop. We need a hero is what we need.
We need a hero. And what do you know, back in the bamboo forest, Peach Kid's all grown up. Super strong now. He's splitting wood with his bare hands. He goes and he digs out a well for his parents so they can have water.
Now, at this point, yeah, the fairy has intervened, sped up the development of Peach Kid, because she's the fairy's like, this isn't happening fast enough. We need a hero pronto. And So by this point, it is the grown actor Peach Baby playing the Peach Kid.
Oh, yeah. I think there'd been some earlier scenes where they were just like, wow, Peach Kid sure eats a lot, but needs to grow up faster.
Yeah. And the grandma and the grandpa, the old man and the old woman, they couldn't be happier, because there's like, oh, our son is so strong. He can carry us around.
Yes. So we see Peach Kid carrying I think they work as like, loggers in the forest. We see Peach Kid, I think, by himself carrying a whole tree that has been felled, but then also just, carrying the old man around in the forest. And the old man says, this is my son. He bears me up.
Yep. He's very proud. Very proud.
Now, somewhere in here, the king, devil, and the witch attack a castle and kidnap a princess. I recall this going by very fast, but suddenly they've just got a princess captive.
Yeah, and then I forgot about the princess for a while until she becomes important again. So, yeah, it comes by very fast.
But the witch says, it's your lock to have a chance to marry my son. And princess doesn't want to marry her sons. And the witch doesn't like this. She cusses the princess out. And she says, you're indulging in fault finding on my good sons. And then the sons say, Mom, I want the princess. But anyway, the fact that the King Devil has kidnapped the princess leads to the organization of a gigantic rescue effort. So they're like these armies assemble. They're going to go to Devil Island to get the princess back. And who's in charge of this rescue plan but Night Melon himself?
Yeah, there are a couple of other kind of military individuals who there's one guy that is referred to as Bowie in the subtitles for some reason.
A smug priest. He's a priest who shows up.
He's a Dallas priest.
He's very like full of himself when he shows up. He's like, I will defeat, I will go with you. We will defeat the King Devil. And Night Melon taunts him by saying like, what, you're going to defeat him by praying at him?
Yeah. Yeah. He's very cowardly in this too. The first peeing scene comes about though, because our hero, the Peach Kid, shows up and is like, I'm strong. I'm ready to help. There's also a lot of back and forth where the father, the old man, is like, I will go to war. You shouldn't have to go to war and fight the devil. And but then they realize, oh, the old man is too old. He can't do it. It's got to be Peach Kid. So tears in their eyes, Peach Kid goes off to join the army. But then the generals in the army are like, you're too young. You can't do this. And then the three guardian animals show up and they're like, how can they bully our master like that? Let's go pee in their drinks. And so
that's right.
The monkey and the dog go and pee in their drinks that are set out without anybody, you know, looking out for them. And then they show up and they're like, oh, let's have our alcohol now. And so they start drinking their drinks that now have animal urine in them. And they start making comedic, gross faces about how weird it tastes.
I think they have to run, Nightmelon and Priest Bowie have to run behind a curtain to vomit.
Yeah. A good time is had by all.
Oh, but Peach Kid eventually, so yeah, we assemble the characters. So you got Nightmelon and Priest Bowie and the armies. And then Peach Kid eventually proves his worth by wrestling a bull, I think. Is that right?
Yes. Yes. Like slams it.
Yeah, slams a bull down. And then also Peach Kid is joined by the three animal guardians from the Peach Shrine on the mountaintop. So they're allied with Peach Kid now. I think maybe were they recruited by the fairy? I think so.
Yeah, yeah, because they were a part of the original guardian crew for the Peach Baby. So
yeah.
They're loyal. And they also eventually tell Peach Kid what's up, like tells Peach Kid about Peach Kid's birth parents and so forth.
Right. So they pee in the food and all that. But eventually Peach Kid is accepted into Nightmelon's retinue here. And they're going to go attack the Devil Island together. But unfortunately, Nightmelon's forces are decimated by a vicious witch attack on the army encampment that involves an attempted seduction of Nightmelon, the destruction of his forces. Rob, do you want to describe this in some more detail? What all goes down here?
Oh, I mean, it's a frenzied action sequence. We all, with also that seductive sequence of where the witch shows up, pretends to be the princess. Nightmelon's like, oh, I will kiss you. And then she transforms into the witch before he can kiss her, and hilarity ensues. But then, yeah, the demon force attacks. And yeah, it's a great action sequence, stuff flaming in the night. We get to see the wind demon. And yeah, I think one of my favorite mini battles in the whole picture is Peach Kid versus Wind Demon.
Oh yeah.
And we see this first tussle between these two in this sequence, and Wind Demon kind of gets the better of Peach Kid
by blowing the wind out of the bag through a pipe.
Right. Yeah. And we realize like this isn't over. These two have a score to settle later on.
So Nightmelon survives this attack. I think does Priest Bowie just run away? I think he does.
Yeah, he's like, I better pretend to be dead so I can survive. And then he does that, and then he kind of crawls away.
Yeah.
So the forces that are going to oppose the Devil King are decimated, but our key heroes survive. And at this point, it becomes clear that this effort is not going to succeed as a pure military venture with siege equipment like it originally was headed. No, this is going to have to be a hero squad-oriented action. We're going to have to send our heroes in to the inner sanctum of the Devil King and stop him.
That's right. So for the final showdown, Peach Kid, Nightmelon, and the three animal guardians mount an assault on Devil Island. I don't know, we can talk about the various elements of this, but I will just say the final battle is a religious experience. It will open eyes you did not know you had.
Oh man, so much. There's so much to talk about in it. Just for starters, since I mentioned the first part of it already, we get the second half of the battle of Peach Kid versus the Wind Demon. And in this one, like Peach Kid has learned the tricks, and like just the language, like the physical language of the fight sequence is so great. Eventually Peach Kid gets the upper hand, and they do this bit where they both have this tube and they're blowing into the tube. And Peach Kid can blow harder and stronger at this point than Wind Demon. And she makes the Wind Demon's head explode scanner style. And we get a freeze frame of like head chunks and gore exploding from this creature's head.
Peach Kid as Michael Ironside as Daryl Revick. Yes.
Yes. Absolutely wonderful. Like if the movie had ended at that point, I would have been like, fine, that's great. I can go home happy.
Oh, also before the fight starts, we get a return of the mutant sharks.
Yep, there's a brutal fight with them in which one of the sharks has the shark mutants has their fin sliced off by Peach Kid. And then after the battle, they're like, hey, where'd Melon go? And then Melon comes swimming up with like a bunch of shark fins from the shark demons. And he's like, these are nutritious.
Oh,
I'm going to
no.
eat them. So we get a shark fin soup joke in there, which, you know, I wasn't crazy about, though. I guess we have to keep in mind this was the 80s. And I think the messaging against the, the ecologically harmful and ethically problematic practice of shark finning. It didn't really come until like 2005 or so. And so, yeah. And then also, I guess it's better in that at least it's played up as kind of a doofus move on Melon's part, because they're like, don't eat that melon, you're going to poison yourself. And he's like, oh, okay.
Oh, yes, because they're demon shark fins, not regular shark fins. So he's, yeah. Oh, I didn't think of that.
So anyway, they get him to leave the shark fins, and then they keep going into the inner sanctum for this big battle. Yeah, and then the battle ensues. The action is just sizzling. We get that final encounter between Peach Kid and the Wind Demon. Meanwhile, we have Melon going to rescue the princess, and we mentioned earlier how the fairy uses love to power him up, and it's also in this sequence where he has to battle Hercules.
Hercules, remember, is the demon from hell who's got big muscles and like a spiked club.
Yeah, very much this kind of oni ogre kind of a figure, brute strength. And it's ultimately a really fun fight because Melon holds his own pretty well against Hercules, but he's just not getting it done. But after the love sinks in and takes effect, he's able to just kind of like casually kill Hercules. Yeah. Like he's walking away with his princess, and then he kind of like flicks a spear with his foot back behind him and impales Hercules through the heart. It's beautiful.
That's the power of love.
Yeah, they could have played it and it would have fit perfectly.
But we haven't gotten yet to the most amazing thing that happens in this film, which is the emergence of Mecha Peach.
Oh, yeah, because everybody's at this point trying to... I think the witch gets dispatched. She gets blown up with a rocket shot by one of the three animal guardian kids. Mm. And then it's just them against the Demon King. But the Demon King has this magical sword, and it's quickly becoming obvious that the crew cannot take him out. Like, he's busting out against Melon. Melon hits the dirt. The three kids take on hybrid forms, which are hilarious, because one has long monkey arms, mm-hmm. one has, like, a dog claws, and the other one has a single a pheasant wing. And so they jump into battle, and these sort of wild form Path of the Beast weapons seem to work well against the demon underlings, but they are no match for the king.
The he's punching him with the wing.
Yeah. And so
is that
even,
what wings are good for?
I don't know, but they can't do it. They can't pull it off. And even Peach Kid seems unable to get the upper hand against Demon King.
So they've got to power up. Hey, we get a power up here.
Yes. It's the return of the Holy Peach. Peach comes flying back in. Demon King, what, slices the peach up with the sword, and the slices become other peaches?
I forget exactly how we get the transformation into Mecha Peach. What is the sequence here?
Yeah, I think Peach shows up. Peach gets sliced by the sword, but then the peach pieces assemble Voltron style into this large, kind of like a peach golem, like a big peach marionette. Every time Mecha Peach is on screen and on the screen in this movie, it manages to be the weirdest scene ever committed to screen. It's just such a bonkers presentation.
I couldn't believe it. It looks so weird, but also so familiar. This is something we were talking about before we started. I was like, Mecha Peach feels like something I've seen before, even though I know I haven't. I think it's just that Mecha Peach in its puppet form has like some visual similarities to other objects.
Yeah, like I was getting notes of Mr. Bill, notes of a Cupid doll, and notes of Panic Pete, that little squeeze toy with the bulging eyeballs.
That's really good.
But then it very much is its own thing as well. And it's got a weird energy too, because it laughs with a Donald Duck laugh or something very much like a Donald Duck laugh, going like...
So like the King Devil tries to rush it, but Mecha Peach blows a bunch of, I don't know, the fog in his face and mm-hmm. knocks him back. And then Mecha Peach pees on him.
Yeah. Pees right in the Devil King's face, and he makes a weird face about it, and the subtitles say piss off. but the Devil King's not gonna stop. He comes in again with the sword. This time there's some like back and forth with the sword, and then the Mecha Peach like bites the sword out of his hand and seems to swallow the sword. And then we get this awesome moment. So there's I think the first thing that happens is Mecha Peach just like knocks the Devil King away and like slams him through a pillar, which is a pretty spectacular looking stunt on its own right. Mm-hmm. And then he gets up, he's standing in front of his Devil Throne, and Mecha Peach opens its mouth. Out of his mouth comes flying Peach Kid with the Sword of the Sun in hand, and Peach Kid violently skewers the Devil King, like through his torso, and skewers him to the throne in just an absolutely quality kill.
Magnificent. I don't know what else we could say.
Just great. Like the only really way to close things out at that point is to have a jumping freeze frame ending, which they do.
They do, yeah. And the credits roll, and we get the song again.
Yes. Oh my God. And it's just so, yeah, so delightful to end on that note where here are heroes. Here's the Peach monstrosity still standing behind them, which again is just this perfect balance of like awkward, weird. I guess it was a marionette, like a large marionette that they used like cranes or scaffolding to create. Like this was not it's not stop motion. It's not, certainly not CGI. So it has it looks kind of bad as you might expect, but also wonderful. And it definitely has a physical reality that you can get behind.
Naughty angels dance on the roof once again.
Yes.
Okay. Do you have anything else or should we wrap it up there?
Ooh, we should probably wrap it up there. But there's so many little details in this movie. It's like I say, you can watch the 2 minute cut, but you certainly won't get everything. And then once you watch it, you may have to go back through and watch it again to appreciate all of the stuff that they just pack into this picture.
Child of Peach, truly a monumental achievement. I've never seen anything quite like it.
Yeah, a lot of fun. So, maybe it's not the most St. Paddy's Day of movies we could have picked, but a lot of fun. And, also like today is also my, this is my 15 year work anniversary since I started with How Stuff Works. So, this movie's a party. So it's my party.
Congratulations.
Oh, well, thank you. All right. Well, we're going to go ahead and close this one out, but we'd love to hear from everyone out there. Are you familiar with Child of Peach? Were you familiar with it or are you familiar with it now? What are your thoughts on it? We'd love to hear from you. Also love to hear from anyone with just more expertise in like Taiwanese cinema in general. If you want to see a complete list of the movies that we've covered on Weird House Cinema, well, you can go to a couple of places. Like I say, I blog about these at samutamusic.com. It's a personal blog of mine. And then also the show, Weird House Cinema, has a profile at letterboxd.com. That's letterboxd.com. Great, movie reviewing, cataloging website that I recommend. We're Weird House on there. And if you follow us, you'll find a list, has all the movies we've covered, and sometimes a snapshot ahead of what we're covering in the week to follow.
Huge thanks to our audio producer, JJ Posway. If you would like to get in touch with us with feedback on this episode or any other, to suggest a topic for the future, or just to say hello, you can email us at contact@stufftoblowyourmind.com.
Stuff to Blow Your Mind is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. 2 420-foot vertical speedways, 3 launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Measure that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 Gs in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.